What will it take to reach a debt ceiling deal? From Marketplace, I'm Nova Safo, in for David Brancaccio. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says Congress could vote on a debt limit deal as soon as next week. President Joe Biden is also speaking optimistically about the negotiations to raise the debt ceiling and avoid a default. Meanwhile, the so-called X date is about a week and a half away, June 1st. That's when the federal government could run out of money, according to the Treasury Department. For more on the protracted standoff and its potential consequences, we turn to Ian Bremmer, founder and president of the political risk consultancy Eurasia Group. He spoke with my colleague Sabri Benishour.
So, you know, we have heard warning after warning after warning about how catastrophic default would be, but neither side seems really to be rushing to get this settled. Why do you think that is?
In part, it's because if the crisis isn't real, then you can't get people motivated to do anything about it. We're at the point where either they'll be forced to do a short-term extension at the last minute, or they'll be coming up to real market pain and Janet Yellen screaming, "You're getting close to default," before everybody pulls all-nighters and, you know, it looks like a real crisis.
You mentioned markets, and markets, you know, have not reacted a ton yet. And one might be tempted to imagine it's because they would think, look, no one would be that stupid to push the U.S. into default. They're going to work it out. But how real is the possibility that they won't?
CEOs have been making pilgrimages to Washington, trying to convince the members of Congress that they spend a lot of money on, you need to do something to whip these guys in shape because this will be a disaster for us. So that's stepping up. I mean, anyone that says that Congress can't possibly be stupid enough to X has not spent enough time in Congress, right? Look, there are Republicans that believe that prioritization is something that should be tested. In other words, go past the X date, but you aren't going to actually default on sovereign debt. Instead, you'd simply shut down some of the programs that the government needs to pay for, and that will get you more leverage. So the Republicans do understand that raising the pressure is a useful tactic. And, you know, Biden understands that refusing to come to the table is something that wears these guys down. But occasionally the game of chicken leads in somebody driving their car into a ditch or even a head-on crash. And there, of course, is some non-negligible percentage likelihood of that.
You know, the other day we spoke to somebody who we were talking about the position of the U.S. dollar as the sort of prime currency of the world. And she was saying, look, the U.S. dollar is going to be dominant for a long time unless the U.S. does something to shoot itself in the foot, like default. So how would a default affect the international economy and the international financial system?
A full-on sovereign default by the United States where the debt limit breaks, that I think would lead to a severe recession in the United States, a stock market crash. It would create panic in other countries. And that would make other currencies more stable and more attractive. But there's nothing out there on the, not even on the horizon, that is a challenger, an attractive challenger to the U.S. dollar.
Ian Bremmer is president and founder of the political risk consultancy Eurasia Group. Ian, always a pleasure.
Good to be with you.
In the mid-1980s, pop artist Andy Warhol used a photo of Prince to create a silkscreen portrait. It's called Orange Prince. Well, yesterday the Supreme Court said Warhol violated the copyright held by the person who took the photo. The decision is likely to have profound implications for the art world and for a legal doctrine known as fair use. I'm joined now by art critic Blake Gopnik, author of the book Warhol. He's writing a piece about this case for the New York Times. Blake, the majority opinion tried to find a middle ground, but it's still seen as a big change. Tell us about what impact you foresee.
Yeah, you know, when the decision first came down on Thursday morning, I think a lot of us were terribly afraid that the Supreme Court had really decided that Warhol didn't have any kind of right to reuse a photograph by the portraitist Lynn Goldsmith. The decision as it came down was actually turned out to be narrower than that. But I think a lot of us worry that in the back door will come more restrictions on how appropriation artists, which is what Warhol is, will in fact not be able to go ahead with their art due to this decision.
Yeah, in fact, Justice Elena Kagan in her dissent said she believes the majority's ruling will stifle creativity. How would creativity be stifled?
Well, there's this notion of fair use, that you're allowed to use someone else's image if you need to in order to create something that's genuinely new, that's transformative, that adds meaning to the image that you're borrowing from. And that's really settled law. What this new decision does is say, well, yes, except in certain contexts, you're not really allowed to do that. And that's really kind of shocking for those of us in the art world. It means that when Warhol borrowed Lynn Goldsmith's image, at least in that particular context of licensing, what he did doesn't really count as transforming what she did. What he did doesn't really count as an important creative act. And that's kind of shocking for one of the greatest artists of the 20th century. His entire MO is reusing other people's images. As Justice Kagan said, if that doesn't count as being creative, then what does?
We'll have to see what the repercussions are. Blake Gopnik, author of the biography entitled Warhol, thank you very much.
Thank you, Nova.
And by the way, justices split 7-2 in this case, and the court's liberal justices were on either side of the ruling. Our digital producer is Jared Dang. Our engineers are Jessen Dueler and Nick Esposito. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.